Live from our nation's capital.
All talk here in Washington, D.C. turns to President-elect Joe Biden's administration. Speaker Pelosi has beat the political odds and reclaimed the gavel. We're talking right now about 2024 jockeying amongst Republicans.
Bloomberg, sound off. The insiders, the influencers, the insights.
Biden has promised again and again that he will unite the country.
The only way things happen is if Republicans and Democrats work together.
Unfortunately for President-elect Biden, this is a time when he's getting the most support he's going to get in the Democratic Party.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg Radio.
My name is Kevin Cirilli. I'm the chief Washington correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. Democratic pressure is building to oust President Trump while President-elect Joe Biden taps the brakes. Meanwhile, GOP Senator Lisa Murkowski has called on President Trump to resign as House Speaker Nancy Pelosi held a caucus telephone call earlier today in which they discussed everything from 25th Amendment to how to get the president to resign to calls for impeachment. We have every angle covered, but we begin tonight with an exclusive interview with centrist Republican Governor of Maryland, Larry Hogan. Governor, welcome back to my program. Thank you for coming on it. What do you think is the best course of action for the country and the executive branch?
Well, first of all, thank you. Thanks for having me on. When I was asked about this, that I really did believe that it was best for the country if the president would resign or leave office, and that Mike Pence could lead an orderly transition of power until we get the inauguration and get President Biden sworn in. Now, you know, I know there's lots of speculation about what should happen, how it might happen. I'm busy out here in the state of Maryland trying to deal with the COVID crisis right now, not part of the inner workings of what's happening in Washington. So I can't tell you what the latest is, but I'm sure you're more up on it than I am. But I do believe that it would be good for the country to heal and if we could move on. I don't know how they're going to get something really done over the next 12 days or whatever it is. But I think it would be smart if the president would step aside and let Mike Pence conduct the orderly transition.
Governor, when I've been talking to sources throughout the day, including sources within the White House, there's this concern, really, that exists about what might happen between now and inauguration. Do you share some of the concerns that Republicans have raised, both quietly and publicly, about what could happen between now and inauguration day?
Well, you know, I've been concerned. Obviously, the events of Wednesday shocked the world, and you know, we're in a much different place than we were. But we've had kind of this strange, bizarro world for a couple of months, where things that you didn't imagine could be happening were happening. I never thought I'd see a day like that. This could happen in America, but. You know, there's no telling. I mean, I just don't know what's going on inside the mind of the president or what's going on inside the White House. But it seems to be a really perilous situation. And I think it's a time we really need to be cautious and cooler heads prevail. And that's why I thought it was best to try to get things under control.
You know, and I think this is important, folks, and we're talking with Governor Larry Hogan of Maryland, and what you mentioned about, as you've been clear in your position over the last 24 hours in calling on President Trump to resign. I spoke with one source connected to the White House today who works with cabinet-level officials who told me about the Constitution's 25th Amendment and how that is actually enacted. A lot of in the current social media environment that we live in, it's important to actually read the Constitution. So from your perspective, Governor, as a scholar, so to speak, is the 25th Amendment the right course of action given the limited number of days that are left between now and January 20th?
Well, first of all, thanks for calling me a scholar, but I'm pretty far from that. you know, that's what I was saying. I'm not sure. I believe the best action, the best way to handle it would be for the president to resign, because I'm not sure whether really in the short period of time that we have that any other method is possible or doable. I mean, look, it's I'm not sure whether they have the time to get it done. They're talking about, they're talking about impeachment proceedings. I mean, look, that can't get done that fast. We've been trying for 8.5 months to get a COVID relief bill that was desperately needed through the Congress. I just think, my dad was on the House Judiciary Committee and he was the first Republican to come out for Nixon's impeachment. And right after his vote is when Nixon decided to resign the presidency. And as bad as Watergate was, the president had the state of mind where he knew it was the right thing for the country, and he stepped aside. I'm sure it was the hardest thing he had to do, but it was the right thing for the country, and I think it's the same thing that President Trump ought to do.
Governor, Speaker Pelosi, as well, it's looking like they're inching closer toward impeachment proceedings. I really don't like to do this as a journalist, but I got to ask you, in a hypothetical situation, because you are a leader of the Republican Party, do you support impeachment?
Well, of course, I don't have a vote on impeachment, but if that's the I don't vote in the Congress, but yep. If that's the position that if the Republicans in the House and the Senate are willing to take that step, and that's the only way it's going to happen, then I would be supportive of their actions.
So you think that if impeachment, similar to Nixon, were to signal, as you mentioned with your father, were to signal a move for the president to resign, that would be the right course of action?
Well, I think him to resign would be the right course of action, but I'm not sure that's going to happen, and I'm not sure an impeachment or a 25th Amendment is going to happen either. I think the most likely outcome is that we're going to spend the next 12 days kind of hoping that things go smoothly, and Joe Biden's going to be sworn in on January 20th.
All right, and let's. There's been a lot of talk over the last couple of days, and you've talked about the situation with National Guard being sent to Washington, D.C. and what happened. But just give us the chronology of what happened on Wednesday with sending support to the nation's capital.
Sure. Well, it was a surreal kind of day. We were busy day, focused on, vaccines and the COVID crisis. And I was planning to do an economic relief announcement, and I was on a Zoom with the Japanese ambassador having a teleconference when my chief of staff walked in and informed me that the U.S. Capitol was under attack. I wasn't watching television. I was in the middle of meetings, so I excused myself from that call with the ambassador immediately, and I convened my entire security team, my senior staff, our Homeland Security advisor, Superintendent of the Maryland State Police, the Adjutant General of the Maryland National Guard, and brought them all in. We got assembled everybody within, 5 minutes, either on the phone or in person. I talked with the mayor of D.C. who was requesting assistance, and I sent our entire mobile field force of more than 200 specially trained and armed Maryland police directly into the city. And I told the National Guard, our Adjutant General, to immediately call up 500 members of the Maryland National Guard and have them ready to deploy. While these discussions are going on, I get a call from Steny Hoyer, who says to me that he's in a bunker or in some undisclosed location in a room with Speaker Pelosi and with Chuck Schumer. And he's, pleading with me for help because the Capitol Police have been overrun. They don't have any federal help. And he's asking me. He's a leader of Congress, but he's a Maryland represents Maryland. And he calls me as the Maryland governor next door to say, can you send the police and the National Guard? And I told him the Maryland State Police were already en route and should be there shortly, and that I had deployed the guard, but we did. We could not send the guard into D.C. without the approval of the Secretary of Defense. Usually a governor with a neighboring governor could do that, but the mayor of D.C. does not have control of the guard, only the Secretary of Defense does. So it was a kind of a crazy back and forth with Hoyer yelling across the room to Schumer, who, back and forth about we don't have authorization. And our generals are running it up the flagpole at the Pentagon and to the National Guard Bureau in Washington saying, do we have approval? No. do we have confirmation yet? No. And that was back and forth for quite a while. Finally, about an hour and a half later, I'm still in all these decision-making processes. The guard is fully mobilized. The state police are already defending the Capitol. I get a call from the Secretary of the Army, Ryan McCarthy, who said gave us the authorization. And the Maryland National Guard immediately rolled into the city. We were the first guard there.
As you recount that, there's questions about who should be held responsible for the events that occurred. What should the consequences be? I asked you about the 25th Amendment resignation. You made your position very clear. But in the judicial branch, what role should the judicial branch play here? Is there charges that should be brought against individuals who maybe incited this? And who do you think those individuals are?
I really don't. I don't know. I mean, you mean incited the insurrection at the Capitol?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think Rudy Giuliani, members of the First Family, President Trump, should they bear responsibility for this, not just through the media, but through legal action?
Well, that's for the courts to decide. There's no question that I think it's pretty clear that the president and many people close to him did, were responsible for inciting this mob. But I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a judge. I'm sure these are going to be decisions that are going to be looked at. I'm sure there's going to be investigations into who these people were, how they got into the Capitol. Where was the security or the Capitol Police? There's a whole lot of unanswered questions. Look, this just happened 2 days ago. Right now, we've got to get a peaceful transition of power. That's what I'm mostly focused on, where there's going to be after action reports, and we're going to have to figure out a lot of answers to a lot of questions. People responsible for this outrageous attack on our democracy are going to have to answer for these charges. But right now, my goal is I have the 500 members of the Maryland National Guard staying in Washington through the inauguration and try to keep the peace and keep the inauguration safe and to assist with the peaceful transition of power. I know I was glad to see Vice President Pence said he's going to be at the inauguration. I will as well. We're going to do everything we can to make sure that our democracy functions the way it always does and always shall.
Just to reset here, folks, my name is Kevin Cirilli. I'm the chief Washington correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. We have a great guest who's to start things off. Governor Chris Christie is going to join me in the next half hour. But Governor Larry Hogan of Maryland is with us. He is a Republican. And I want to talk about the economy. But just to continue talking about the events of today or of this week, rather, and as you, as an elected official, try to put in perspective not just the horrific nature of the attack on the Capitol earlier this week, but political violence, sir, as a whole, that has been occurring around the world, here in the United States, it feels that it's increased, and the pace of it has increased. And from a policy standpoint, how do we get back to a place in our democracy where that problem isn't exacerbated?
Well, it's an excellent question. I mean, this was sort of the pinnacle of this is something that we never imagined could happen in America, but it's been building for quite some time, and the anger, divisiveness, the inflamed rhetoric on both the right and the left, and on social media. It's been increasing at an exponential pace in America and across the world. And we've all got to figure out what to do about this. It's something, I've built my entire career on, I'm a lifelong business guy, but I've been governor for 6 years. This will be my third president now coming in those 6 years. But I have preached every day for 6 years that we need to get to a more civil dialogue and to a more that I want to end the toxic politics that we have in this country and to try to find a way. We have disagreements and we have strong differences of opinion, but we have to get to the a point where we can try to find that middle ground where we can all stand together. We have to find a way to come up with bipartisan common sense solutions. We have to find a way to disagree without turning the other side into enemies or questioning their patriotism or attacking them and calling them names on social media. And it's something I'm gonna spend a lot of time working on because I think it's critically important for the nation.
I remember over the summer when I went down to Annapolis from Washington, D.C. to interview you. It was right at the beginning, really, of the first beginnings of the lockdowns and the pandemic and whatnot. And I interviewed you on the lawn of the Maryland State Capitol, Governor Hogan, and we talked about this theme and sort of the themes of your career and where the Republican Party goes from here. And so I'll ask you a similar question now. As you weigh your political future and the choices, difficult, life-changing choices that you're going to have to make, sir, in the next 2 years, how did the events of this week, the events of this year, weigh into your decision-making process about whether to seek the highest office in America?
Well, you know, this is something that... it's just the wrong time to be thinking about what happens in 2024 when we haven't even finished the 2020 election. Number two, you know, we're in the middle of these twin crises before this happened, before this attack at the very heart of our Democratic Republic. We're fighting the worst worst global pandemic of our lifetime, and with deaths escalating, and we're trying to figure out a way to vaccinate hundreds of millions of people. And so I'm focused, I'm very focused on my very important job as governor of the state of Maryland. It's been a key role in the past year leading the nation's governors through this pandemic. We're still in the middle of that. And I'm not trying to dodge the question. I'm just telling you that, I'm still governor of this state until January of 2023. And I plan on, really focusing my efforts on giving this job everything I've got every single day, because we have to get through this crisis and save lives and put our economic health back on track, get our economic recovery going and save small businesses and put people back to work. And so there'll be plenty of time to worry about politics. But I do want to be a big part of the discussion about where we go, both for the Republican Party and where we go as a nation. So, I'm not going away. I'm going to continue to do everything I can. I'm focused on my state, but I'm going to speak up and speak out and do everything I can to try to put the country back on the right track.
No, I don't take that as a dodge. I take it as an honest assessment about the moment of where we are. And I think too many in the media ask those questions as if it's a box to check and don't really explore the real implications and the severity of what that question really represents. Do you, sir, think enough members of your party are willing to have this conversation along with you?
Well, we're going to find out. A lot of people are at the point now where they're in a different place where they were last week. I'm exactly where I've always been and haven't changed or moved a single place from where I've been. But a lot of people have turned around 180 degrees in the past couple of days. I think there are most people in America really want to figure out a way for people to work together and solve the problems. And most people in America are disgusted with the divisive, angry politics and the dysfunction of Washington that we see, not just what's going on right now, but what's been going on for years and on both sides of the aisle. And, I think we have to go in another direction. I mean, my party, for example, the Republican Party, has to decide. I was involved in, I was a Youth for Reagan chairman. I want to see us return to a more Reagan-esque, bigger tent, more hopeful, positive message kind of a party. Other people want to continue heading in the direction of Donald Trump. A week ago, there weren't as many people willing to think or talk the way I was, but today there seem to be a lot more.
And you know what? There are people all throughout the country, Governor Hogan's with us, who – members of the middle class who are watching the news, watching the horrific images of the attack on the Capitol, and they're thinking, what about me and my job? You know, what about my family and the conversations pertaining to helping families? And I know you want to talk about the economy, and we had the news of the week to get through. So now let's turn to what President-elect Joe Biden had to say about his proposal, because he says he has a stimulus package price tag that will be, quote unquote, high. I've got sound on this, so I want to play for it now and then get your reaction to President-elect Biden's economic stimulus proposal. Here he is.
It will be in the trillions of dollars, the entire package. But it will be, I'll be here next Thursday laying out in detail how that package is going to go. But the basic story is simple, that if we don't act now, things are going to get much worse and harder to get out of the hole later. So we have to invest now.
Governor Hogan, do we need much more stimulus? Do we need the $2,000 checks? What would you like to see in the next round of economic relief to help these families across the country who are trying to keep their head above the water?
Well, you know, first of all, I tend to agree in general. I just first I heard, you know, I've been busy doing other things, didn't even hear his proposal today until you displayed that. But I haven't seen the details of it, obviously. But there's no question we need more economic stimulus. And I've been pushing for that as the chairman of the governors for quite some time. We did get a slim package passed through. I'm now the chairman of No Labels, which is the group that started the Problem Solvers Caucus, made up of Democrats and Republicans in the House and the Senate working together. And they're the ones that were responsible for finally getting the leaders of both parties together to get a package done. But it wasn't enough. And so, you know, I welcome the opportunity. President Biden has reached out a couple of times already to the executive committee of the NGA and to all of the governors. We've had a couple of discussions. He says he wants to work together with Republicans in a bipartisan way. He wants to reach across the aisle. I think there is, you know, while I'm sure there are going to be differences of opinion about specifics, the idea that we need to help people get through this pandemic and to get to the other side, it's going to take some stimulus if we want to keep businesses alive, keep individuals, you know, supported through this thing. And look, we're going to come out of this stronger and better than ever. You know, when we finally get enough vaccines out there and we finally beat this virus, the economy is going to come roaring back. It's just getting from here to there. And if we don't get some help out to people, an awful lot of people are going to be, you know, losing their homes and losing their businesses. And we've lost the job loss has just been horrific. And while, you know, there may be encouraging signs, you know, on Wall Street, you know, the Main Street is still suffering pretty bad.
Governor, I got to be candid. I go back to the conversation I had with you in Annapolis over the summer, because I talk to Republicans who tell me, Kev, aid for state governments right now is a bailout on with taxpayers on the hook. You, sir, have been very consistent that you've said that more money is needed for the states. Do you feel confident that the party will go in your direction for these next round of economic relief talks?
Yes, I think that they will. So it really was the president primarily was the one that was against giving money to the states, and he convinced you know, of some folks in the Senate to stay where he was. But we had at one point, and it sort of fell apart, the coalition. But I had a nearly unanimous approval of all the nation's governors to go down and push for this. We almost had it. We had it on the 5-yard line, about to push it over, and then it got off track for 8.5 months with the Senate and the House and the White House all fighting. And finally, with the No Labels and the Problem Solvers Caucus, we got part of it back on track, but no aid to the states. We got some help, much needed help, and we're grateful for it. And we thank the guys who worked hard to get it done. But we have to come back. I mean, we're on the front lines providing, you know, tremendous resources to try to help our states and our populations and our business communities survive. And so one of the big things that was missing was the no aid to the state and local governments, and we're going to have to get that on track. But more importantly, we got to get the money in the hands of struggling Americans and struggling small businesses. And
Governor Hogan, I'm not going to take it personally that you just made a football analogy, because your Baltimore Ravens are doing better than my Philadelphia Eagles fared season.
I won't rub it in that the Eagles aren't quite up to par with the Ravens, but then again, not too many teams are.
Oh, wow. Look at that. In the 30 seconds I have left for you, why do you remain hopeful? Quickly, because I'm up against an out.
I really believe that we've reached the turning point. I believe that that we're going to learn from this and move forward. I think a lot of people are going to work toward making America a better place and returning some civility. Thank you for having me today.
Anytime. Governor Hogan, thank you so much. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg TV and Radio. This is Bloomberg.